for some football, baby.
It's a Football Friday with the Boss.
I call shots like a boss.
In the gloss.
Check out my lip gloss. I only rock clear.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Welcome in, everyone. You are listening to The Boss and the Gloss, and it is great to be back with you, Carla. Although we are sitting in a city that is licking its chops this morning with two devastating losses wiped out by the Rockets. I mean, the Rockets are just miserable against the Lakers, and of course, the Texans fall to the Chiefs. Tough day to be here in Houston, Texans.
Yeah, it's a tough start. Tough start. But big night last night for sports fans. I'm going to say that. I mean, we've had basically a drought for the first several months of this pandemic, and last night we had, you know, NFL game one. I will say that the Texans did score the first touchdown of the NFL season. So we do have that to hang our hats on, and that's about it.
Well, it's a big day for sports fans, too, because with COVID, you've been off the air for a long time. And when you look around the NFL, Patrick Chung, CJ Mosley, others, they chose to opt out of the season. Damian Williams last night did not play. He has opted out. There were whispers that you were going to opt out. But no, you've opted in.
Your dreams did not come true. I'm sitting next to you and I'm ready to go.
This is a dream come true. And behind the glass,
a nightmare for Ron Culver.
Well, but yeah, behind the glass, we've got our long-suffering Chargers fan, the man who actually made us famous, one of our first producers ever. We reunite with you, Ron Culver. Great to see you.
Great to be back. I'm glad you guys were able to bump Jake out.
Well, poor Jake.
It's a nice little break.
Because he doesn't rock clear lip gloss. That's
exactly why.
You know, got to start the morning with.
And he's a Jets fan. Yeah. I mean, what do we do with that?
I know. You got to love a Jets fan, though. Man, it's almost as painful as you and me. Ron's a Chargers fan. I'm a Raiders fan. Yeah, we've been through it.
I'm going to go through it again. But this is a different year where I feel it's okay to go through it. I'm fine with them going 1-15.
Well, for the first time in a long time, your expectations are low. It seems every year the Chargers come in really hot, really high, and then it's a collapse that's devastating.
And the other thing is I now have a good excuse for the Chargers not having fans in the stands.
Yeah, you do. Absolutely. There you go. You don't have to worry about the visitors outdoing the home team.
No, I don't. I don't have to worry about that this year.
You don't think Carson City's going to turn around their luck? The new stadium? I think it might do it. It just might do it.
All right, when we come back, we're going to break down the Chiefs-Texans game, and we're going to look at, the Chiefs' offense even better than last year? That when we return here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
At the Sports Map Radio Network, we wear Boomer Naturals masks. Order now at BoomerNaturals.com. Use promo code SportsMapRadio for 20% off. It's a Football Friday with the Boss.
In the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Carla, I hope I don't embarrass you by telling you this.
Oh, here we go. You are not wasting any time this morning. Wake me up.
But you have never looked better than you do now. With that Boomer Naturals mask covering your face.
you
look beautiful, stunning. BoomerNaturals.com. They'll give you a great-looking mask like Carla Dawson. How about that?
And you can wear it for hours with no ear irritation and no breathing. You know where you can kind of suck it in? That doesn't happen with Boomer Naturals. It's awesome. It's my favorite.
All right. I'll tell you another guy who looked pretty good. It was last night. Edwards-Helaire, the running back, the electric running back out of LSU.
Clyde the Glide.
Joining the Chiefs last night, and he was very impressive.
He was really impressive. I mean, look at this line. He's the first-round running back that went to the Chiefs out of LSU. I loved him in college. He is not tall, but man, he is strong. 138 yards and a touchdown last night in his NFL debut. Texans looked like they'd seen a ghost. They didn't even know how to stop a run. He was incredible. I will say, they don't have a book on him, really, other than LSU. But Kansas City with these weapons, the Texans defense, credit Anthony Weaver, you know, new defensive coordinator for the Texans, took away the long ball. Patrick Mahomes' longest completion was 19 yards. However, they just turned to their rookie running back. I mean, they had Damian Williams opt out of the season.
Yep.
And they were still able to put up just to kill the Texans with their one weapon at a running back. Wow.
Well, it is interesting that the Chiefs may have drafted the rookie of the year. I mean, right now, it's early, one game. But he has all the tools to be a rookie of the year, and he's in the right setting to have a great season. And, in fact, some people pick him high in fantasy. He's going to be a very productive back out of that backfield with all the weapons they have. I guess what I was most struck by is that it was clear that the Texans were going to try to take away the deep pass. As you said, they had two safeties back deep for most of the game. And the Chiefs
and that was successful as far as, you know, 19 yards being as long as
in many regards, it really was. But the Chiefs just didn't blink. They just said, okay, well, we're going to hand the ball off. We're going to throw the short pass. There were lots of little screens and short routes out to Kelce. They really made adjustments that the Texans were not able to stop.
No, they were not, which is just kind of the recurring, the broken record with the Texans. I mean, they cannot make the adjustments. They cannot make the stops. And they've got weapons. They do not have the weapons the Chiefs have by any stretch of the imagination. But that defense got hammered last night.
Yes, and there's a piece of me that when I look at that game, it's hard for me to criticize the Texans' defense so much as I want to give credit to that Chiefs' offense. But what I thought the Texans could do is be more prolific on the offensive side of the ball. I thought with the new weapons and Deshaun Watson, I was looking for and hoping for the Texans, a bit of a shootout that Watson and company could stay in the race, could run alongside that Chiefs offense for at least three quarters and make it more of a game. But the game was over very early. I mean, the final score looks closer than it really seemed
right
to be.
Well, because the Chiefs laid down, which is something that if you're Andy Reid, you're not happy about that, because at one point it was 31-7, and then all of a sudden, towards the end of the game, it was 31-20, which you're right, it really wasn't that close. And Andy Reid should be upset. You put away teams. You don't lay down like that. But what I will say is that I liked the start. I mean, the Texans held the Chiefs scoreless in the first quarter.
Yep.
That's great. That's positive. Texans were first on the board. That's positive.
They benefited greatly from the overturn of the catch that was deep early.
Oh, absolutely.
But still,
and
yes,
that was the right call.
That was the right
very
call.
Very much the right call. But, you know, you look at Deshaun Watson. He had, other than his one interception, he had a great night, 253 yards, two touchdowns, one passing, one rushing. That, you know, first one by David Johnson, which is exciting, which is the new running back. But I have to say that we got from Arizona, missing DeAndre Hopkins, just not sure that DeAndre Hopkins trade for David Johnson was the way to go.
Well, after week one, when you look at the productivity of the receivers, just their ability to get separation, and frankly, there were a handful of drops. Will Fuller could have caught two, I know, that were in the vicinity. Watson put it right where they needed to be. No, the receiving corps did not look impressive. There are some names there. I mean, Will Fuller has always been loaded with potential, and he's struggled with injuries. Brandon Cooks, of course, has pedigree. He was a former first-round pick.
Kenny Stills.
But, yes, he's had injuries as well. But, no, right now, looking after week one, you'd much rather have DeAndre Hopkins on that lineup, and that's sort of self-evident. David Johnson did show well.
He did show well.
But I think Hopkins can do more for that offense, and certainly over the course of a season, because Johnson's really struggled with injuries over the last couple of years.
Well, let's bring up the name that really is to blame for the lack of futility on the Texans' offense. And once again, it's Bill O'Brien, who did not put Deshaun Watson in a position to win. He punted twice from midfield on fourth and short. When you're down 17 in the third quarter against the Chiefs, what are you doing punting from midfield?
Well, and juxtapose that, earlier in the game, of course, Andy Reid made the decision to go for it on fourth and short from his own end of the field, which is a very aggressive play. And it was sort of interesting. The announcers supported him after the fact. They said it was a great thing. If he had been stopped, they would have said, why do that? They surely would have picked on him.
It's early. You were in your territory. Yes,
that's
exactly
right. It was a very unconventional decision. Reid did it. It paid off. And then the track race was on. The Chiefs are really unstoppable offensively from there.
Well, what do you think, given last night, do you think there's any chance if this continues, this kind of play calling, this kind of game management continues, do you think Bill O'Brien keeps his job throughout this year or at the end of this year? Deshaun's locked up till 2025.
Right.
And is happily the the team's first franchise quarterback, the real deal, the future. And then we have Bill O'Brien, coach/GM. Where do you see his future if this what we saw last night is what's to come?
See, I think the Texans are going to land somewhere between 7-9 and 10-6. And that keeps them in the neighborhood of the division title. If they go 10-6, yeah, they might actually pull it off, and they have in the past. If they finish 7-9, yeah, I think Brian's in trouble, but I don't see a decision in the season. The one thing that is ominous for the Texans is the opening schedule. I mean, they do have a horrific lineup of teams they've got to face.
They have the toughest opening four-game schedule in the entire NFL.
Yeah, so after the Chiefs last night, Texans will go on to face the Ravens, then the Steelers with Roethlisberger back there, Vikings, and at that moment the Texans could be 0-4. I mean, Ravens, Steelers, and Vikings are good, and then they get the Jags, and they got the following that the Titans, the Packers, and then the Jags again. So the Jaguars are the team they think they can beat. That's two wins out of the first 8 games, and they could be 2-6.
It's a tough opening schedule.
Houston will be howling for Bill O'Brien's head if that's the case, because, of course, he's the guy. He has both the GM title and the head coaching title. All accountability falls on his shoulders.
Yeah, and I could say successfully he's done poorly at both GM and coach. I'm starting out already. Week one, game one.
You're calling for his head after week one?
I was lulled into false thinking he'd changed when Deshaun got his 4-year deal that he wanted and was paid well and given the keys to the kingdom, and then last night showed me, no, don't go there. He is still Bill O'Brien. But you know what? Let's be positive, think that things can improve.
Well, last night we did get to see the two highest paid players in the NFL, Mahomes and Watson. And notably, Watson really was emotional about getting his contract, a 4-year deal worth $156 million. At an average annual compensation rate of $39 million. But he was emotional. He was very grateful and said that he really felt like the franchise trusted him. It was an emotional thing for him.
It was very emotional, and it was so neat in his press conference to see Dabo Swinney come in. You know, the kid from the Make-A-Wish Foundation, the cancer survivor, come in and talk. His high school football coach talk, and then when his family was all there, he literally lost it. But I really love what he said, was that, hey, the money is cool. Let's not. And that's exactly what he said. The money is cool. $160 million cool. But he said, the most important thing to me is the trust that the organization has in me. And they do trust him. Why wouldn't you?
Yep.
I trust him too. I just don't trust your coach.
I do get the impression, though, that Watson has trust in O'Brien. That
they have a good relationship, relationship.
In the Houston fan base, there's a lot of affection for Deshaun Watson and a lot of vitriol for Bill O'Brien. And yet those two seem to be in sync. At least everything Watson has said has been fairly positive about Coach O'Brien.
But that is Watson. I mean, if you heard in his press conference, he said, you know, talked about growing up in Georgia and the adversity that he and his family faced with his mom having cancer, him having to take care of the kids, growing up in these government projects. And he said, negative things are going to happen. You learn from them, you move on, and you look at the positive. And I think that's why his relationship with Bill O'Brien is so good. It's like, wow, negative things are going to happen. This guy trusts me. I'm going to learn from him and move on. And the guy is learning from them. I mean, Deshaun Watson gets better every year. He's just amazing, and I can't wait to see what he can do. I just don't want to see him handicapped by his head coach.
One last comment about the Chiefs. So it just felt like they were a team that was mid-season form.
Yeah.
I mean, they could adjust their offense to what the Texans were doing. Their defense looked good. Clark was in the backfield harassing Watson for a good chunk of the night. Mm-hmm. By the way, I did not think it was a good night for Titus Howard.
No,
he started slowly, and he struggled to keep Clark out of the backfield. But the Chiefs just looked really good. I mean, the only issue for the Chiefs is, are we ever going to find a way to keep Andy Reid from fogging up his glass? I enjoyed seeing that because he's got those big spectacles usually, and now he's got the glass on
it. Kind of the mad professor look.
It was
perfect.
It's the nerdy mad professor conjuring up plays. And out on Twitter, there were so many fun little memes about what he looked like and was he sketching out plays in the fog of his glass because he's so creative in drawing up plays. Anyway, that was one of the fun sideshows of week one in the NFL.
Well, I think it'll be interesting to see. I noticed it last night, and I'll be curious to see the games on Sunday. The effects of no padded practices and no practice games and this kind of thing. I thought that maybe that's part of the reason the Texans defense just could not stop the run. They just have not had the regular preseason and the regular practices they're used to. Same with the Chiefs.
Yeah, it could be a tough week for tackling in the NFL.
Exactly. That's where I thought it really showed up, as in the tackling. You're exactly right.
All right, when we come back, we're going to shift gears. We're going to look at the NBA, a big game last night. Lakers winning big over the Rockets, taking a 3-1 lead. That up next when we return on the Sports Map Radio Network.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Don't, Carla, let a bad battery leave you stranded. The professional parts people at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery free of charge. If it needs to be replaced, O'Reilly Auto Parts can help you find the exact battery for your car or truck at a guaranteed low price. Keep your vehicle on the road by getting your battery tested for free at O'Reilly Auto Parts. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day.
Always looking out for me. Thank you, boss.
I always am.
Yes, you are.
So the Lakers-Rockets last night. Lakers looked really impressive. It felt like they finally got things put together. They now have a 3-1 commanding series lead. Is this series over?
Yes.
Yeah.
The series is over. I mean, I do want to point out that I find this the most fascinating about the NBA playoffs. And then we'll go back to Rockets Lakers. Lake Buena Vista, Florida. Did you ever think we would be seeing every single playoff game in Lake Buena Vista, Florida?
I did not.
Wow.
In a bubble there.
It's kind of crazy. But you know what?
It
works. I hand it to Adam Silver for his amazing leadership and how this has worked. I mean, it's incredible. This game is a lot of contact. And there's no protection. They're not in pads. They're not covered. And look at this.
Yes.
Other than Daniel House, we don't seem to have issues with COVID testing.
Well, yeah, Daniel House. Woo. So the rumors are that he snuck away and now he's got to find his way back.
Oh, no, he didn't sneak. It's even better. He had a female COVID tester. He welcomed her into his room. Well, he's under investigation for welcoming.
Why do you say
allegedly,
it with such a little look on your face?
Because let's be real. Can we just digress for a minute?
Yes.
This is too early for this. I know. Ron, just forgive me. Okay. I'll go to confession later. But let's be real. Okay, so you've got this Lake Buena Vista, Florida bubble.
Yes.
Nobody could come in. You know, now in this round of the playoffs, they're allowing it. These are a lot of men with a lot of testosterone.
Yes.
And you're saying, nope, can't be with family, can't be with your lady, can't be with your baby mama, nothing. I mean, you're – of course they're going to be sneaking in. Whoever. I mean, you just have to be a little realistic.
So
with
he snuck in an attractive woman to give him a COVID test.
Well, I don't know. Allegedly. But I just find that I mean, obviously, his allegiance needs to be to the Rockets. We're at a very pivotal point. If you're Houston in this series, Lakers are up 3-1 now. And, you know, whoever's going to move on to the Western Conference Finals, you just kind of have to use your willpower.
I think Daniel House needs to call up that woman and send her to LeBron's room, because that may be the only way the Rockets are going to get back into this series.
Or AD's room.
AD, LeBron, those two have
or
really...
Or Rondo. He has been, to me, he has been the surprise star. He is playoff Rondo.
Yeah.
I mean, wow. He has really been a spark for the Lakers when they have needed it.
Game three, he really stood out to me in particular. Watching Rondo back at the Celtics, it would seem back then teams dared him to shoot.
Sure.
They would. He was a great, quick guy, great on the drive, but he didn't have the outside shot. And then in game three against the Rockets.
21 points, 9 assists.
He was
amazing. He almost had a double-double.
Okay, so yes, the 9 assists I might have expected, because he'd always been pretty good at distributing the ball. But to hit the threes the way he did, that was a big difference maker in what turned out to be pivotal game three. because really with the 2-1 lead, then it looked like last night the Rockets already knew it was a fait accompli, and they did not come to play or compete well.
They did in the fourth quarter.
Right.
I'll be darned.
Yep.
It's kind of late when you come in the playoffs then. But, you know, they did make – I think that LeBron was upset, and rightfully so, that an almost 20-point lead in the fourth quarter became, at one point, single digits.
Yep.
The Rockets turned it on in the fourth quarter, which you just go, really? You're looking at game four of the Western Conference semis, and you can't get yourself up to play for the first three quarters with the talent that you have. James Harden was 1 for 7 in the first half.
Hmm.
You know, the difference is you looked at the Rockets shutting down Golden State in the Western Conference Finals last year in Game 7, where Steph Curry had 0 points in the first half and came on to kill it in the second half and move on. You know, this is where I worry about the Rockets. They don't seem to be able to have that playoff gear.
Well, James Harden has struggled in the playoffs over the years, although he's had some very good games. He had some good games against OKC. Mm-hmm. The Lakers, interesting how they set it up, though, last night. They really didn't play their centers, their traditional big men. It's almost like the Lakers said, we're going to play small ball. It's a better set of matchups for us. Although I have to say, it's very telling when a team can look at another team and say, we see what your game is. We'll play your game and beat you at your game, which is what the Lakers did last night. Dwight Howard barely saw the court.
No.
He didn't.
Howard and Kuzma have been pretty quiet because they again, it's about adjustments, which we talked about. You know, Frank Vogel's like, we struggled in game one and two with speed, with their speed, keeping up with their speed. So we got to sit down our big men and bring in Rondo and Caruso and these people. Because you look in game two, the only reason that L.A. was able to pull it out, and it was by 8 points, is because Westbrook was 4 of 15, 1 of 7 from threes, and had 7 turnovers. Had Russell Westbrook just even been average Russell Westbrook, I mean, the Lakers probably don't pull out game two. But then they make the adjustments, and they sit their big guys, you know, much more. And now look what's happening. They're beating him by double digits. So even if on Saturday's game five, even if the Rockets win game five, which I don't really foresee happening, I want to say that they can because I'm in Houston, but I've seen this for years now. I think the Lakers still pull it out in seven. I think they're going to finish it in six, but I don't worry about them pulling it out in seven. What do you think?
Yeah, I think the series is over. I think it's going to be 4-1. I think the Lakers are going to get the next game. I think the Lakers are proving to be the class of the league this year. I mean, they presumably will have a good challenge against the Clippers next round.
I think it's going to be a great series.
A great series. And really, that's the championship series. It'll be better than whatever comes out of the East.
Yeah.
But let's shift gears to the East. I mean, the East, the Raptors-Celtics series has probably been the best series of anything that's come out of the bubble. That game six, the double overtime game, was an epic game. Of course, the game three with the shot at the buzzer that kept the Raptors in the series was a big game. That series has been really impressive to me. And when we go back and look at game six in the double overtime, the refs have now come out. The NBA has reported there were some missed calls that really could have been the difference.
A big one on Kemba that was missed on Kemba Walker that would have put another 4 seconds instead of 0.4, would have been 4.4. For Boston.
Well, and Kemba would have gone to the line. Kemba makes those shots. And that was right at the end of regulation. Celtics may well have won that game in regulation, and then they would be advancing now to play the Heat. But game seven tonight, and I really can't pick it. I'll tell you, Kyle Lowry has impressed me more than I ever imagined.
Show. Unreal. He put that team on his back, and he was money. And he's such a good guy. I want to root for him, even though I love me some Celtics.
Well, Celtics have great young talent in Tatum and Brown. They are missing Gordon Hayward. I think he's an addition to that team.
More than I thought they would.
Well,
yeah,
we'll see tonight if they can pull that one out.
What's your prediction tonight?
I'm thinking the Celtics will come out on top by about 4.
Okay, I like it. You heard it here. The boss says.
When we come back, we're going to get a chance to visit with Lindsey Jones. She's the senior NFL writer for The Athletic. It will be Lindsey Jones up next. We'll talk to her about the NFL on the Sports Map Radio Network.
to Football Friday with the Boss.
And the Gloss.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow.
And Carla Dawson.
Welcome back, and it is a Football Friday, and no better way to celebrate it than to have Lindsey Jones join us. Lindsey is the lead NFL writer at The Athletic. Lindsey, welcome to the show. You're on with David and Carla.
Hi, how are you? Thanks for having me.
We are doing great. We are sitting here thinking that the rest of the NFL watching that game last night must be shuddering at how good the Chiefs looked.
Yeah, I think that was part of it. I mean, I think there was just a lot of, like, relief around the league that we got here. But then you watch that, and I think there was an expectation that we just didn't know exactly what the game, the product on the field would look like without preseason games. So few teams actually did any sort of live tackling. But then all of a sudden you say, okay, the Chiefs really not just left off or picked up where they left off in February, but they might actually be better. And that is, like you said, pretty terrifying, or at least it should be for the rest of the AFC especially.
No, agreed, Lindsey. I mean, that was disappointing to see that it wasn't matched on the other side of the ball, that's for sure, as a Texans fan over here. But I wanted to ask you, David Johnson had a nice debut last night with Houston, averaged over 7 yards a carry, 11 carries, 77 yards, and a running touchdown. Does his performance take away any of the sting from that Hopkins trade? How do you feel about that?
No, I don't. You know, I think he could. I mean, he would. I think he would need to rush for 2,000 yards and take the Texans to the playoffs, and
yes,
you know, be in MVP conversation probably for that trade to make sense. And look, now we've seen the DeAndre Hopkins contract. We've seen how much money he was able to get from the Cardinals. And so, you know, I can get that the Texans knew that was coming and that they felt they could get something for him and they didn't want to go through that. But DeAndre Hopkins is one of the one or two or three best players at his position in the league and has been for, 4 or 5 years in a row. And he will probably continue to be. And I think David Johnson will be a nice piece in a Texans offense, but he's not their best player and he's not, you know, he's not transformative. And DeAndre Hopkins has the potential to be transformative now for the Cardinals.
Lindsey, what's missing with the Texans? I mean, they've locked up their franchise quarterback. He's phenomenal. What's the issue? Are we looking at the coach / general manager? What's holding
him? Yeah, I mean, I think that's, you know, it's easy to kind of make the Bill O'Brien general manager jokes, but I think there is, it's real, right? I mean, you look at
a lot of
the decisions that he's made. Yeah, I mean, and some of the moves to, you know, I think the Laramie Tunsil deal is going to end up being a good one. And, you know, he's going to be a really important piece there. But yeah, I mean, maybe let's just hire a general manager. But, you know, I think the defense has taken a bit of a step back. I mean, Zach Cunningham was really good last night. He was kind of a revelation. But, you know, I think on all levels, the rest of that defense has some issues. I mean, I don't think it's a surprise that the Chiefs won that game. It was disappointing to see that the gulf was as big as it was. And, you know, they added, you know, scores late, so it made it look a little closer. But, you know, up until about, 7 or 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter, the game wasn't competitive at all. And that's really, you know, and that's disappointing considering that it was a, you know, a playoff rematch from, you know, a pretty exciting game, and that the Texans won in Arrowhead Stadium in the regular season last year.
Outside of the lines, Lindsey, what were your thoughts on the anthem actions last night with the Chiefs linking arms on field while the Texans stayed in the locker room and then they came out together in unity to fight for equality? What were your thoughts about how that went down last night?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to unpack there because, you know, there were three very distinct things that happened. And also the Texans, you know, that a little bit before the game, the Miami Dolphins announced in a video, Miami Dolphins players specifically, that they would not come out on the field for the anthem before their game against the Patriots this weekend. So there was a little bit of precedent. I'm sure the Texans had already decided that they didn't see the Dolphins video and say, aha, that's what we're going to do. But I think what we're seeing is that we're going to see unified demonstrations from teams largely. I think we might see some individual players choose to kneel, like we saw Alex Okafor kneel for the Chiefs. But largely these teams and the players are wanting to do things together much more so than they did several years ago in 2017, especially. And, you know, so what I saw from the Texans and what my interpretation was is that they wanted to present a unified front. And they wanted to kind of take this narrative back of what was happening and what protest means. And, you know, I've been part of this as part of the national NFL media, who's been, you know, covering this for 4 or 5 years now, is that there is this inclination that, you know, the cameras are on the anthem. You know, I've sat in press boxes with my binoculars on and counting, you know, and looking to see, okay, during the anthem, okay, oh, the, you know, Michael Bennett is sitting and, you know, Marcus Peters is kneeling or whatever it is. You watch, and that's not helpful. I don't think it's instructive anymore, because of the meaning behind the protests. It's not necessarily about like who is doing what. It's about why are they doing it. And by the Texans not coming out to the field, it was not participating in the NFL's narrative. The NFL, you know, painted and racism, and it takes all of us on the field, and, you know, maybe trying to co-opt that a little bit. And, you know, they're taking that back. They're not going to have the images of themselves kneeling that could be used for political purposes. So yeah, there was that. And then I think the other thing was, it was very clear that there were fans booing the moment of unity.
Right.
And that's really, that's really, really disappointing. And that's a really bad right. look for fans in Kansas City. And I really hope that, you know, there's only going to be a handful of other stadiums that have fans this weekend, but I hope they watched that and they realized how embarrassing that was and what a bad look that was for Chiefs fans, and that nobody else in the NFL does that this weekend.
We are talking
booing. I think the moments of unity and the, what players doing what they want is fine, but the fans don't do what the Chiefs fans did.
We're talking to Lindsay Jones. She's the lead NFL writer at The Athletic. You can read her there. Her column comes out on Monday, and her podcasts are there on Thursday. Lindsay, I want to pepper you around. Some other questions are in the NFL. So Brady and Belichick, they're now separate. Which team will win more, the Buccaneers or the Patriots this year?
Whew, yeah, I mean, they both end up, you know, could end up winning a lot of games.
Yeah.
I think the Bucs personnel-wise are set up better to win. I mean, just the sheer number of offensive weapons that Brady has. You know, I like their coaching staff a lot. I'm so curious what that offense is actually going to look like, because Brady's not necessarily a Bruce Arians style of quarterback, just in terms of, you know, how much he wants to go downfield. But all the reports out of training camp was that he was airing it out, you know, throwing it 40 yards at a time. So we'll see. So, I mean, that is the game I'm most interested to watch on Sunday, is that is the Bucs Saints game. But yeah, I mean, we talked on our podcast the other day. We talked through the Coach of the Year candidates, and kind of laughed at, like, this might be the year that Bill Belichick actually wins it, because if the Patriots are good or even decent, you know, a 9-10 win team that could win the AFC East, I mean, that would take a hell of a coaching job, because that roster is not great, especially on offense. I'm really, really intrigued by Cam Newton. You know, he could, if he's healthy and they get really creative on offense, and some of these guys we've never heard of as skill position players step up outside of Julian Edelman, I mean, it could be a really great kind of redemption story, and, you know, this revenge tour for Cam Newton after nobody wanted him all off season. So, incredible storylines. I mean, the divorce between Belichick and Brady is going to have such wide-reaching ramifications across the NFL, and, you know, none of us know how it's going to play out, other than, you know, I think Belichick is probably going to get them positioned to win some games, and I think the Bucs are going to be really fun.
One of the interesting questions I've been wondering about, and I've read different answers to this, is Belichick's been effusive talking about Cam Newton in language and description that surpasses anything he ever used to say about Tom Brady. What's behind that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's interesting, right? Because, yeah, he never would, like, build up Tom. And I think part of that was, you know, I think there's a lot of mind games, and there's just a lot of psychology that goes into what Bill Belichick does. And so much of it was with Brady was about the message and the tone that he was sending to the rest of the team, and that if it was all about do your job and, you're, you know, 53 of us, it takes every person. And, you know, they wanted to project that Brady wasn't different than everybody else. And, you know, Brady, who's, you know, married to the supermodel and has billions of dollars and, you know, his own TV12 company, and, you know, is really kind of a celebrity in his own right, that he wasn't special, and that, like, Bill was going to treat Tom Brady the same way that he treated everybody else. There might be a message going on in there now that, they really need to project tremendous confidence in Cam Newton and establishing that he is our guy, he is your guy, he's playing great, we're going to be good. And so I bet that message is as much to the rest of his players about just their confidence and what they can do with him, and that we don't need Tom Brady to win. And that's, I'm guessing that there's just a lot of psychology going in there. And look, he might believe it. He might be really, really excited about Cam Newton. I mean, Cam Newton was the league MVP just 5 seasons ago. So there's a lot of reasons that you probably should be excited about Cam Newton. But yeah, I mean, I would love to do just a super deep dive psychological study into like all of the different mind games. I mean, we talk all the time about, or make lots of jokes about, Bill Belichick's media demeanor, but yeah, there's a reason behind everything that he does.
We're talking to Lindsay Jones. She's an NFL expert at The Athletic. So I'd love to know, a team that's a bit under the radar, not getting much acclaim, what's a sleeper pick for you this year?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's fair to call them a sleeper because they've been getting a lot of buzz all of a sudden. But the team that I'm kind of just most excited to see if they're going to go on the rise is Arizona Cardinals. Mm. And, you know, they don't get a ton of luck nationally. They don't get a lot of national, you know, national games. Chandler Jones is just perennially underrated. I mean, he's either, like, led the league in sacks or been in the top 2 or 3 almost every year over the last several years. And, you know, nobody talks about him because the Cardinals haven't won games. But I was really excited about what Kyler Murray did in his first year, and now they have consistency on that offensive coaching staff, and better players. Sorry to bring up DeAndre Hopkins again, but
you have to, you know, though, so it's a difference maker.
Right. I mean, I'm just excited to see if they can take a jump and what kind of year two of this air raid offense in the NFL looks like. Because what we saw in year one is that it can work, and, you know, it didn't light the league on fire in 1 year or anything, but, you know, we've seen other quarterbacks make a tremendous jump year one to year two. I'm not going to predict if he's going to win the MVP like Patrick Mahomes or Lamar Jackson did, but, you know, I just think they're a team that was on the right trajectory last season and now has the potential to make a pretty significant jump. The one caveat there is that they're playing in what I believe is the deepest and most difficult division in the NFL. So, you know, to be able to catch up to the Niners and the Seahawks, and I think every game against the Rams will be really difficult as well. But, you know, I mean, basically at this point, every NFC West game for me this year is going to be the must watch, like the game that I'm going to try to isolate on my TV away from Red Zone.
Okay, well, Lindsay, you can come on the show anytime because David's division pick was the NFC West, and my sleeper pick was Arizona. So we just are like, I'm feeling really good. If I'm thinking like Lindsay Jones, I'm feeling really good this morning.
Awesome. Well, that's good to know.
Okay, question about Alex Smith. My gosh, 22 months after severely breaking his leg with complications where he almost lost his leg, he has not only made the 53-man roster, basically the guy's getting back on the field again. Do you think this is a great decision for him? And what do you see for his future?
Yeah, I mean, you kind of just have to let him make his own, you know, choices there, right? I mean, he's a veteran. He's played a long time. And it was very clear to me from watching the ESPN documentary that he allowed ESPN to document his entire recovery, which was
amazing.
Really, really incredible. And, you know, part of that was probably like when they started that, they didn't know what was going to happen. But, you know, it became pretty clear that he set his sights on, I'm going to play again. I'm going to at least get back on the field. And 2020 was this timeline that they looked at. And, you know, he has had, you know, significant concussion history. If this was coming back from another head injury, I probably would be saying, like, what are you doing, Alex? Like, think about your family and your future and your children. And, but, you know, this is his leg. And if the doctors have said he's okay, I mean, it's just remarkable. I mean, to go from having his leg just completely open. I mean, we saw it. If you watched that video, I mean, it was really intense to watch. But, you know, I spent a decent amount of time around the Chiefs when Alex Smith was there. And, you know, I think people who have coached him, played with him, played against him, have really nothing but respect for the way that he's gone about his entire career. I mean, his years in Arizona were really difficult with just the roster that was around him, the, you know, immense turnover of coaching staff that he kind of had to play through. And then, you know, so I guess I've always kind of been, you know, a bigger Alex Smith fan than a lot of my brethren in the national media. So, you know, I think it's just incredible that he's there. And, you know, I put down on our staff predictions that he should win comeback player of the year, regardless if he plays a snap or not. The fact that he made it back to training camp, that he made the 53-man roster. I mean, that's really, really remarkable. And
he's
it would
already
be quite a story
won in that sense,
him.
Yes.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
Great story.
I'm curious, if he plays this year, it's because either Haskins is playing really, really poorly or Haskins has gotten hurt. You know, I'm a little more curious if he wants to continue his career, into 2021 and try to be a starter somewhere else in the future.
That's Lindsay Jones. You can get her at The Athletic. Her column comes out on Mondays. Her podcasts are out on Thursdays. Lindsay, thank you so much for joining us here on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're listening to Football Friday with the Boss
and the Gloss
on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Presented by Blue Emu and Rocket Mortgage.
From the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios, here's David Gow
and Carla Dawson.
Well, that was an incredible first hour. Great to have Lindsay Jones of The Athletic join us. I will say that hour of Sports Map Radio has been presented by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. Hour number one of the books, Sports Map Radio Network. We'll be right back.